we let them know.
They should. They can find out more. If they make a donation, we can tell them a little bit more about how the station works.
Absolutely. 845-482-4141, WJFFradio.org. Those are some ways to give. And right now we want to say a big thank you to listener Clayton from New York. Thank you so much. Bill, this is what you were waiting for.
There it is. It works. Okay, I thought maybe it was just a phony. It actually works.
It totally works. It's not a dud. I rang that bell for Clayton. Thank you so much for helping us out right now, making a donation online at WJFFradio.org. You can also donate at 845-482-4141. I'm here. Bill's here. Someone will talk to you. It's time now for us to start the local edition. Yeah, it's a local edition. It's news and information that keeps you connected in the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania. I'm your host, Jason Dole. I'm not your host on Fridays, though. That's when Patricia Rubio comes in. I'm not your host on the first Tuesday of the month either, at least not for long, because that's when I hand things over to Bill Williams. And that's what we are about to do this evening, because it is the Kingfisher Project. And in a moment, we'll hear Julie Pazal explain how the Kingfisher Project got started. But before we get into the program and the interview tonight, and in a moment, we'll hear you explain who the guest is, too. But before we get into that, I thought maybe you would want to just share with the listeners what your thoughts are on, you know, the Kingfisher Project being here on Radio Catskill and anything you'd like to let them know about that.
Well, I stumbled into the Kingfisher Project when a local listener told me about it. And I had lost my son 10 years ago to heroin addiction. I'd done some writing about it, and somebody said, you know, maybe you should contact the people at the Kingfisher Problem, maybe the project, maybe they'd like to hear from you. And I did, and the rest is history. I was a guest a number of times, and then I was asked if I would host the show. And that's what I've been doing for a year and a half, with maybe a little time out for the pandemic, but that's what I've been doing.
Yeah, originally the show was part of Making Waves and the whole Making Waves crew, and the Greffs, especially Barbara and Kevin, were a big part of getting Kingfisher started and a big part of keeping Making Waves going. And Making Waves kind of wound down, stopped during the pandemic when several programs did. But then in the midst of the pandemic, even Bill got a hold of us and said, hey, you know what? We should start doing this again. And we said, well, you know what? Matter of fact, we've got a show that's just right for community conversations like the Kingfisher Project. It's called the Local Edition. So Kingfisher Project on Local Edition. It's a great conjunction of, you know, opportunities for community connections here on Radio Catskill. It's what we're here for, to be a hub to distribute information. And as Bill said earlier, in the case of the serious subjects of the Kingfisher Project, information against opioids and addiction, this is information that can save lives and help people continue living even as they deal with the ravages of addiction in their lives. You give people information on ways forward.
Certainly how to connect, how to people that are in recovery. We talk to a lot of people that are in recovery, and also to give people an idea of what addiction is all about, maybe to remove some of the stigma that surrounds addiction, so people that were in recovery can recover in a more accepting atmosphere.
Yeah, and from the beginning, removing that stigma was one of the number one things that Barbara Greff wanted to do with the Kingfisher Project. So yeah. Thanks so much to the Greffs for all the work they did in getting us started. Thanks to everybody that supported this along the way. Bill, thanks for the work that you did. We're going to get into this week's episode. We'll be back before long to ask people for their support, so we should let them know now how they can support us while the interview is going on.
I would call 845-482-4141, and that's what you should do, 845-482-4141. Or go online and contact us at WJFFradio.org. Thank you.
Welcome to the Kingfisher Project, information and awareness about the heroin and opiate epidemic. I'm Julie Pazal. The Kingfisher Project began in memory of my daughter, Rebecca Jean Pazal, who was shot and killed due to her heroin addiction. At her memorial service, her former teacher, Mr. Okazalik, read an essay she wrote. It was about a bird, an injured kingfisher bird that she found and rescued when everyone else had given up on the bird. In that spirit, our community came together and formed the Kingfisher Project. Since 2014, we have been raising awareness about the drug and opiate crisis in our listening area and around the country, right here on Radio Catskill. Here is Bill Williams.
Thank you, Julie. My guest today is Stephanie Marcassano, founder of the Harris Project. The Harris Project is committed to advancing prevention programming and advocates for the implementation of integrated treatment opportunities to improve the lives of teens and young adults diagnosed with co-occurring disorders. COD is the combination of one or more mental health challenges and substance misuse and/or substance addiction. Stephanie and the Harris Project were featured in a recent New York Times opinion piece titled, "Experts Say We Have the Tools to Fight Addiction, So Why Are More Americans Overdosing Than Ever?" Welcome, Stephanie.
Thank you so much for having me, Bill.
How did the Times find you?
So interestingly enough, I've been doing work around co-occurring disorders since my son Harris died by accidental overdose in 2013. I educate and empower young people and communities to understand this relationship between mental health and substance misuse and addiction. And I get the good fortune of working with many elected officials in New York State, one of whom is Senator Pete Harcum, who chairs the Alcohol and Substance Use Committee. His staff had outreach from Janine Interlandi from the New York Times. They gave her five names, and I was the second person that she called. When she called me, she never called anybody else. She has her own lived experience that she's written extensively about with her adoptive father and has, through the years, done things like, you know, traveling and moving through the system with a family, ultimately with the death of a loved one, or perhaps they found their way to recovery. Here she was specifically looking at innovation, promising practices, and systems transformation. So when she found her way to me, it was sort of a match made, you know, in heaven. So we had a really great opportunity to work together. We're working together from January all the way through to when the article came out in July.
Wow. I know that at least one practicing psychiatrist I talked to thought that the article was right on point when it was able to catch the divide between mental health, substance use, and regular physical health, and how those three are not, we don't see people holistically. Our system divides people into that triad, if you will.
So interesting that you should say that, because there are a lot of people who are actively advocating for a collaborative care model that would include physical health. I'm always concerned because what I've experienced, I live in Westchester County, New York. I'm very fortunate that our county executive, George Latimer, and our Department of Community Mental Health through our commissioner, Michael Orth, are so invested in the work. We have a co-occurring system of care collaborative, our hospitals, agencies, providers, like everybody is together. So what am I concerned about? My concern is that in a collaborative care model, some of the physical health providers pick the other that they like. So in other words, they're comfortable prescribing medication for opioid use disorder, but they don't want to touch these psychiatric conditions. Or they have a social worker or a behavioral health specialist that's embedded in their practice and they don't want to touch substance use. So my vision and hope is that ultimately New York State creates one single agency of addiction and mental health services so that that side gets aligned. We look at the best practices to roll out. A lot of the work that we're doing in co-occurring really, you know, fits right into that model. And then when you're uniting physical health and sort of the behavioral health sciences, that's when you really hit the home run.
Yeah. Let me go back a little bit.
Sure.
Let's go back, if we may, to the start. One of the things you talk about, or that was actually was in the article, it says she, referring to you, she was adamant about avoiding what she describes as the cliches of the grieving parent turned advocate. What do you mean by that?
So I'm an attorney by training, former PTA president, school board member, Girl Scout troop leader. I've brought in programs through the years. I've interacted with families and loved ones. And what I want to really make sure that people understand is I do not begrudge a family member who has experienced loss, who goes in and speaks to a group of students and kind of holds the picture and shares the story and says, don't do that to your family. But for me, it needed to be more. I wanted to not just create the conversation, but to create sustainable opportunities to embed the work in curriculum, in activities, in school-based sort of transformation. I also didn't want to leave people hanging. I knew what our experience was with the model of care, with what inpatient rehabilitation programs on the substance side traditionally looked like, even though they said they addressed co-occurring disorders. So I wasn't quite sure. I mean, Harris died on a Wednesday. His funeral was on Sunday. My daughter was a senior in high school, a week away from her early decision application to be a social worker. I knew that if I didn't get up and get moving, she wasn't going to go away. I knew I needed to do something, but I didn't want to feel hollow and empty. I didn't want to just share my story. I wanted to use the skills that I thought I had to make broader impact.
Which you've done, no doubt about that. Let me go back. You talked about being a PTA president and being on committees that selected programs that taught kids about the perils of drug abuse. What are any of those programs that come to mind, and how do they succeed or how do they fail, in your opinion?
You know, I'm not really going to poke holes in what other organizations and initiatives have done. What I can say is this. Organically, we developed CODA, Co-Occurring Disorders Awareness. We talk about mental health matters, right? That's, you know, all over social media. There are so many campaigns about it, but nobody really talks about why it matters. So with CODA, we work to empower teens, young adults, family members to understand that when you don't take care of your mental health, you may navigate to things like substance use, you know, for self-medication, to kind of just feel like everybody else, like not to party, but to be able to go to the party feeling comfortable in your own skin. So that's a big part of CODA. In the middle are, you know, people who have a predisposition to a substance use disorder and a mental health disorder. So truly like that co-occurring. Now you have to imagine, I've done this before, right? I've brought programs and now I'm the person, you know, in a pre-COVID world with 1,000 students sitting in an assembly and they're hearing about this thing called co-occurring disorders. They're kind of interested because they never heard of it. But some of them are thinking, well, I'm not part of that 22% that have a mental health disorder with severe impact. I'm interested, but what does this mean for me? And we also get to really educate them to understand the whole concept that your brain isn't fully developed until you're 25. That's a real thing, but has it applied to their life? It means that anytime you vape, you smoke marijuana, you're drinking, maybe you're prescribed opioids for an injury, you can change the chemistry in your brain and develop a mental health disorder even if you weren't on track to. So knowledge is power. If we can really create this base of young people who are really the movers and shakers, who can say, well, I'm not feeling comfortable in my own skin, maybe I should talk to somebody about that. Or I'm going to that party, why am I drinking? Am I drinking because I want to, or am I drinking because I have to? And all of those identifying moments puts the power in the hands of the young person, and then building in the right referral sources, you know, knowing how to link. So we have like two hashtags, like hashtag CODA Connect. Everybody has the power to connect and support one another. Hashtag be the link. Who would you link to if you were concerned about yourself or a friend? So we're being super proactive just to create awareness about what this is. And then it dovetails really well into the systems transformation work, because now we've got educated consumers. They know what it might be that they're looking for in treatment. How do we support the hospitals, the agencies, the providers, the clinicians, delivering the kind of services that we envision? And so that brings me to people like, you know, Senator Harkin, my local state senator's majority leader, Stuart Cousins. You know, I work with Shelley Mayer, who chairs the education committee, really working systemically to make change. But then while we kind of wait for the system to do its work, I work with our county and the counties in the 7-county region on working with Dr. Ken Minkoff, who's in the article on systems transformation, on bringing in evidence-based treatment protocols to really address the needs in an integrated fashion for co-occurring disorders. So it's a lot, and I feel like it's a lot for sort of an audience member to take in, but each piece created additional work to do. You know, you can't educate about co-occurring disorders. Well, you can, but it also kind of like, great, we're having awareness games, we're doing social emotional learning activities, we're building this momentum. But now you've identified yourself or a friend as maybe having this thing called co-occurring disorders. How do you get treatment for it? You know, how do you enter into a system that does something other than what we went through with Harris? I mean, Harris was a senior in high school the first time he went into inpatient residential treatment. We were told he had co-occurring disorders. We were told they treated co-occurring disorders. He came home. I took him to the psychologist, the psychiatrist, the 12-step meeting, the intensive outpatient program, and the gym. Recurrence and use in under 2 weeks. Now we have Encompass in Westchester County with six, you know, providers with all different, you know, no insurance, underinsured, Medicaid, private insurance, private pay. And it's once a week therapy, but it really works specifically with the individual on their triggers for use, on their mental health diagnoses, you know, frequent assessments, coming up with pro-social activities. I feel like all the things I did for Harris, once a week therapy, the right kind of therapy, would have been far more beneficial for him and for us as a family.
You're listening to the Kingfisher Project. My guest this evening is Stephanie Marcassano, founder and organizer of the Harris Project. Stephanie lost her own son to addiction in 2013, I believe, and that's what got her going on the Harris Project, which you're hearing about right now.
And we're taking a pause from this interview because we need to ask for your support for crucial programming, crucial local programming that you can only get on Radio Catskill. 845-482-4141 to make your donation. We've got the second half of tonight's portion of the interview, but the second half of the entire interview, we're going to be on again next Tuesday. You're going to be on again with the rest of this interview next Tuesday.
Same time, same station.
Same
but in the meantime, you're going to call 845-482-4141 to keep the station going, support the station, support the Kingfisher Project, or go to WJFFradio.org.
WJFFradio.org. I'm just checking real quick to see if another – nope, I haven't seen another donation online. We haven't had the phone ring, so you could be the next person. Call and support of the radio station that brings you the local edition 5 nights a week, local news and information that keeps you connected with the Kingfisher Project on at least once a month on the first Tuesday of the month. Bill Williams and these phenomenal conversations that he has right here on publicly supported airwaves, a radio station that can only be here because listeners like you decide to give. We're going to get into the second half of the program. As we do, remember that number, use it, call it, and help us out.
845-482-4141.
Now, where we left off in the interview, Stephanie was talking about all the hoops that she had to hoops and hurdles that she had to jump through and when she was going through what she went through with Harris, and Bill picks up the conversation from there.
I'm familiar with all this because when I read the article, and it says Harris was trapped in a vortex, it talks about his anxiety, his ADHD, and all the various steps you took, things you did to try to get him help. As you know, we lost our son William almost 10 years ago now, and I have a similar litany of inpatient, outpatient, psychiatrists, what have you, to ultimately no effect.
Exactly, and that, I think, is it's the position that individuals find themselves in when they're seeking treatment. I think it's part of the stigma that comes along. You know, we can, oh, it's a choice. Oh, you're not trying harder. Oh, you really need to do this. Oh, we need to let them hit bottom. And families, you know, well, why are you doing this or why are you doing that? And oftentimes, I've been asked through the years, particularly by young people after a presentation, you know, do you feel guilty? Who are you angry at? Who do you blame? And I say, you know, you kids don't come with a rule book, no real guide. You kind of do the best you can as parents, but you lean on the experts in the field. And so I wouldn't claim to have expert knowledge in cancer or, you know, diabetes treatment, but if I'm diagnosed with something and I go to see people, my hope would be that I'm getting the best of what's out there. And I think that we've allowed, because of stigma about use, about mental health disorders, we've allowed kind of the system to run rogue with not a lot of accountability. And so in the beginning, I think I was a disruptor to some degree. You know, I would share my story. I was given, you know, the few minutes in a collaborative or a coalition meeting to kind of make my point. But what I learned really early on was, truth be told, most providers, most clinicians want to do the best they can. They just haven't had access to the ability to get trained appropriately, for there to be supervision and evidence-based practices to really do the work that everybody knows. Like, there are people in my county, my commissioner, who was working, he worked with Dr. Ken Minkoff like in 1999. And, you know, why didn't it take root? Like, why didn't it happen? And I think part of it is just the timing. It's, you know, the readiness. It's the number of, you know, overdose deaths, alcohol-related deaths, completed suicides. You know, we, even with causes of death, we set up silos. The statistics are not brought together. But when you think of it in terms of co-occurring, you really look at sort of the largest public health emergency that nobody really knows it has a name, you know? And so it all kind of works together because, you know, young people like your son and the kind of work that you're doing to kind of amplify the messaging, we all find our way through this. And for some families, it's literally just being able to get out of bed in the morning. You know, it's a win for you if you've been paralyzed in your grief and loss that you were able to get up and get moving for the day, or you walked your dog, or you were able to go to the supermarket. For me, I couldn't sit in my head. It was spinning. I needed to concretely look at the problem and come up with the day-to-day joys, which is what CODA brings me. There's nothing better than being with young people who are leading the charge, you know, empowering their friends, talking the message and doing the work. That's amazing. But you also need to actually move the system on this, because otherwise it'll be like 1999 all over again. You know, those who've been in the field for a long time, first it was MICA, mental illness, chemical abuser. Then it's CAMI, chemical abuser, mental illness. Then it's dual diagnosis. Now it's co-occurring disorders. But ultimately, the book is written. You know, the federal government wrote SAMHSA, Substance Abuse Mental Health Services Administration, TIP 42, you know, treatment for people with co-occurring disorders. It's not like we had to reinvent the wheel. We just need people to implement it and use it. So that's sort of a call to action. You know, I think that if you're a listener with a loved one who's currently, you know, struggling, that, you know, you're trying to navigate to the best of what's out there. You're trying to ask the right questions about both and what kind of treatment modalities are used. But if you're sort of the general person out there, like, what can I do? It's educating yourself about what co-occurring disorders is, looking closely at where the system is failing people, and then becoming part of the movement to get change to happen.
I'm going to assume, because this happens to me, and I'm sure this is your experience, that from time to time, or maybe in your case very often, people will contact you and say, I have a family member who's got substance use problems, or maybe they're sophisticated enough to say co-occurring disorders, and they ask you, where do you suggest I go for help? When people ask you that question, what do you answer?
So local, I'm really fortunate because locally I have, you know, there are 6 agencies and more than 40 clinicians who are in the middle of being certified in Encompass. They're delivering Encompass all the time, you know, even with, you know, waiting lists and things, Encompass individuals are getting navigated in sooner. We're hoping to be able to look at how to implement this statewide. So besides all of the co-occurring work that I'm doing, I've also been appointed to the New York State Opioid Settlement Fund Advisory Board. So I'm part of that 21-person board. And there's a lot of, you know, funding that's coming into the state. And I have the incredibly good fortune of working with some important, powerful people in that room who all bring their perspectives and their experiences and their livelihood, because a lot of them are working in the field. And co-occurring disorders will be part of the overlay on our recommendations, how to really create this better system for people. Because right now, there are agencies throughout the state who are working as best they can under the current structure to deliver the services. So it's really, you know, asking around, finding people who've had great experiences, finding out who the best clinician is at a particular agency that does this kind of work. But ultimately, the goal will be to really embed this across the board as part of the, you know, no wrong door philosophy. Like, I've shown up here and maybe I'm talking about my mental health, but maybe if you were integrating in your assessments, you could find out about my substance use first too, and really create that integrated plan. And so if assessments are integrated, then you can create the treatment plan that's integrated, and then you're really addressing everything that's going on with the person. Because what we don't want and what we're trying desperately to move away from is sequential treatment. Like, okay, I hear you have both, but you need to, you know, deal with your substance use first. And then when you have 6 months of no use, then we can see what's really going on and treat your mental health. Not evidence-based, not the gold standard. Then you have the situation where, you know, well, I'm a substance use provider, so I can treat that, but you need to go over there for your mental health treatment. Well, here you've got people who are complicated, and now we're telling them they need to do more things, and they may be hearing different things from the different providers. And so bringing all of this together is the ultimate goal. But when you're struggling and you're in the throes of it, it's really trying to navigate, like I said, in Westchester, it's much easier to navigate. We're hoping to make it easier to navigate across the state so that people can get access to this kind of treatment and care.
Well, it's definitely tougher here where I am, where we are in the Catskills, where it's a more rural area and where people have to go further to get help, and there aren't as many practitioners, not to mention even whether they're qualified.
Well, I mean, geographically, it's challenging for providers when you're not in the same sort of county or space. But I will say that Paula Riggs, the developer of Encompass, so she developed it out of the University of Colorado, and they have used a virtual platform since the inception so that they could reach more people across Colorado. So in Westchester, for example, you know, the pandemic was sort of our friend in this, not that there was anything good that really came out of it, but having virtual sessions, you know, Dr. Riggs did both rounds of training during COVID virtually. Our clinical consultation meetings are all virtual. Many of the providers see young people in person, but many also use a virtual platform. So as long as you have Wi-Fi and access, you can be doing it that way as well.
I've been talking with Stephanie Marcassano of the Harris Project, the founder of the Harris Project. Thank you so much. Keep up your good work, and thank you.
And thank you for all you do, and thank you so much for having me.
And that's going to do it for tonight's edition of the Local Edition, but that's not going to do it for Bill Williams' interview with Stephanie Marcassano. Return to this space next week to hear the second half. There's a whole additional 25 minutes or so of conversation that we're going to get on next week right here on the Local Edition. In the meantime, I am here, and Bill Williams, who conducted that interview, is here as well. We're looking for your support for the Kingfisher Project, for the Local Edition, and for the radio station by supporting the radio station that brings these programs to you every week. Bill, thanks for being here tonight.
Well, thanks for having me, Jason. It occurred to me while I was listening to this interview, I did it, and then I listened to it just now. When people make a donation, they're really helping the station help others, particularly with the Kingfisher Project.
Yeah.
And if we can encourage them to do that, it just would mean the world to a lot of, you might be surprised who they help.
Yeah, thanks for putting it that way. I mean, that's what we all, I mean, I think people look out for people wherever they are, you know, but to get by up here in the country, you know, you really got to have community to look after people, because people are so spread out, resources are so thin, funding can be thin. So that's what we're here for, is a community hub to connect people with ideas and so much more. Ideas, information, news. 845-482-4141. You can call us here. I think people can still donate online too, Bill.
WJFFradio.org. They certainly can. WJFFradio.org.
Okay, we're going to take a break and get ready for the Music Emporium. It's coming right up next. Thank you again, Bill, for being out here.
Thank you, Jason. I had a good time being with you.
I'm Dan Hoost, Director of Communications for Sullivan County Government, and I came to see these new studios, which are absolutely fabulous, and just wanted to celebrate with one of our key media outlets in the area, one that I certainly rely on as the communications guy at the county government and making sure people understand what we're doing, sometimes in a very, very quick and timely manner.
And we've really put that to the test the last few years.
Well, I don't want people to take this the wrong way, but you're best in catastrophes.
I've been saying that for years, be that news.
This is a wonderful community resource, something that people should treasure. And I hope people continue to support this community radio station because it is a one of a kind in this region. Help Radio Catskill.